This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
From ABC News, this is Perspective, this week's stories and why they matter. I'm Sherry Preston. Coming up, a video that went viral. A Las Vegas judge brutally attacked in her own courtroom. We'll tell you about a nationwide effort to protect those on the bench. Behind it, another judge whose family was targeted, her only child killed.
I will live the rest of my life on earth trying to make him proud, trying to make God proud.
A big weekend in the heartland. Voters gearing up to choose a Republican presidential nominee. As the Iowa caucuses kick off, we're talking about everything from the challenges posed by AI and campaign ads to why eating pizza is an important campaign strategy.
Voters tell me that when they get to see candidates in an intimate setting, a one-on-one setting, they really feel a connection to different types of candidates.
And from the fantastical to the wild, gadgets, gizmos, and all things electronics at this year's CES.
The T in this TV stands for transparent. This is a 77-inch glass panel that you can watch your movies and TV shows on, but you can also look through and see whatever's behind your TV.
All ahead on Perspective. The Iowa caucuses, the first in the nation contest where Republican voters will gather in person to make their presidential picks. And they'll do it in rough weather, with a shrinking field of GOP candidates. Former President Donald Trump still leads the pack. But we're leading this week with what happened in Las Vegas, a brutal confrontation inside a courtroom. You may have seen the video, either on TV or on your social media feed. A defendant in court, lunging at a judge, attacking her as she sat on the bench. The defendant leaping across the courtroom, tackling Judge Mary Kay Holtis out of her seat, the American flag behind her falling to the floor. Someone who watched it unfold from New Jersey was U.S. District Court Judge Esther Salas. Her husband was shot, and her only child, her son, was killed by a disgruntled attorney who showed up at her home with a gun back in 2020. Judge Salas is now on a mission to protect all judges nationwide. ABC's Derek Dennis talked to Judge Salas, who hasn't been shy about her advocacy. But in this interview, she gets emotional, recalling the toll the attacks have taken on her and why she's fighting so hard.
So let's talk about why you're so passionate about this. It was 3.5 years ago, July 2020, you and your family were targeted by an attorney who showed up at your home with a gun and opened fire, seriously wounding your husband and killing your son. The suspect was later found dead himself from an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. And the case, and your son's murder in particular, ignited a passion in you, right?
Of my only child and the attempted murder of my husband of 30 now plus years.
And what happened to your family wasn't the first case of its kind.
We don't even know how many states, the over 30,000 judges proudly serve their states and judges that serve in U.S. territories. There's no centralized repository that any of this information is kept. So unlike the U.S. Marshals who can track these things and track the numbers and can tell us how many judicial officers have paid the ultimate price at the state level, there aren't adequate protections for these judicial officers, and we need to do something about that.
But you have been able to do something in New Jersey and at the federal level, right?
We've been able to do, I think, a number of things. I'm so proud of New Jersey, and I always want to thank New Jersey's governor, Governor Murphy, along with the New Jersey legislature for enacting Daniel's Law 4.5 months after my son's killing. At the federal level, we did indeed see the Daniel Anderl Act come into law when it was signed by President Biden on December 23rd of 2022.
And both sets of laws, federal and state, ban the sharing of judges' personal information online. And they also allow federal judges to request their information be taken off the internet.
But it's just a start. When we started to dig and look into what states have enacted laws to protect judicial officers nationally, that's when it became apparent that there certainly aren't enough states that have enacted their own state law. So our mission now is to go state by state, the state leaders, to enact laws like New Jersey and laws like the federal law that will protect personally identifiable information for state and local judges.
So by protection, you mean?
Our personally identifiable information, what's called PII, our home addresses, our mobile numbers, which we now know can be tracked on mobile numbers. We are saying, listen, we are going to continue to have complete transparency, but what we ask is that we not be gunned down at our homes because of one reason and one reason only. We're doing our jobs. Right. And so I think in order for our democracy to stay intact, to be sound, we have to protect judicial officers and we have to be able to do our jobs without fear of retribution, retaliation, or death.
I read that you and your husband have publicly forgiven the attacker.
Yes.
How were you able to do that?
I have to first give credit to my husband. He forgave the killer while he was fighting for his life in the ICU. And I wasn't ready to do that the days after the killing. It took me a few weeks. And then, of course, I was able to forgive during a private mass at our home. I truly believe that forgiveness is necessary in order to heal. It's more about your health and well-being, and I would argue less about theirs.
What would Daniel think of your advocacy work?
You know, I know that Daniel is extremely proud of his dad and me. And I always get, choked up because I know that my son expects us to thrive, not just survive in this world. For me, there's no other option but to continue to advocate and fight for every human being and the dignity of the office and our country's well-being. I said from day one that I never wanted my son's death to be in vain. And I will live the rest of my life on earth trying to make him proud, trying to make God proud, and trying to make the American public proud of the office of our justice system and of the country we all love so much.
Well, I would say that I'm sure he's proud. Judge Esther Salas, thank you for your time and for your efforts to protect judges nationwide.
Thank you so much.
ABC's Derek Dennis and Judge Esther Salas on how she is honoring her son by advocating for judicial safety. And one more thing, that man in Las Vegas seen on that viral video, he has now been charged with attempted murder for the assault. Coming up, pizza and deep fakes at the Iowa caucuses. That's ahead on Perspective after this.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Welcome back to Perspective from ABC News. I'm Sherry Preston. Ready or not, here they come, the Iowa caucuses. We've been talking a lot about the candidates on the Republican side and the lead that former President Trump still commands in the polls. But these caucuses aren't an ordinary contest, as Iowa voters want to see how relatable the candidates are. It's called retail politics, and it brings the campaigns into living rooms, bars, even a popular pizza smorgasbord known as a pizza ranch. ABC's Layli Ipsa is one of our embedded reporters here on the campaign trail. She's been in Iowa for weeks, talking with candidates and with voters. She sat down with us this week. Layli, okay, you've been in Iowa for a while now. What have you learned this week?
Well, I can definitely tell you that candidates have hit the ground running for the most part, really trying to make their closing messages to voters. That's with the exception of former President Donald Trump, who has spent this week voluntarily appearing in the courtroom. He has held the fewest amount of events out of all the candidates, yet he maintains the strongest lead. Voters on the ground tell me that they are unfazed that Trump hasn't been on the ground as much as the other candidates.
Layli, tell us how the caucuses will work. They're confusing to the rest of us, the entire rest of the country. How will it work on Monday night? Because it's not just people going to the polls and checking off who they want to win. It's more complicated than that, but it's also much more homey, if you will.
Definitely. The Iowa caucuses are something that is super unique to this state, and it is something that Iowans are very proud of. So essentially what will happen on Monday, when it is going to be very cold, the forecast says that temperatures are going to be below zero at the time. You know, people will be flocking to churches, schools, they'll be in the cafeterias, and they'll all mix and mingle at first. Then, you know, each candidate will have what they called a caucus captain, a caucus leader, who will deliver a speech in support of their candidate. They'll go through that process, the speeches will happen, and then the voters that are only Republicans that are allowed to be a part of the caucus process this time around will then cast a vote into which candidate they would like to see as their nominee. And then that process will play out throughout all the counties in the state of Iowa. And each county will then determine who their winner is in that precinct. And then whoever maintains the most amount of votes will win Iowa.
You've covered a lot of the country, not just Iowa, but any thoughts on what other states think of Iowa? We know Iowa is very proud of this process, but what other states are saying, why do we put so much emphasis on the state of Iowa every 4 years?
So right now on the ground, what you're seeing in Iowa is candidates at diners, at pizza ranches, which is an all-you-can-eat pizza buffet. They are mixing and mingling with voters. Vivek Ramaswamy holds pizza and beer events with college students. And so nationwide, voters are really able to see the personal side of candidates. Whereas if you go to other states, battleground states like New Hampshire, right? We think to the general election, a state like Georgia, you're really going to see candidates harp on their policies and talk about what they want to do as the future if they become president of the United States. But in Iowa, it is all about FaceTime. It is all about showing your personality. And when you show your personality here in the state of Iowa, the whole nation can see that.
Have you seen any of that in person? Like, can you point out something where it's like, wow, that really showed their personality in that event?
Someone like Vivek Ramaswamy has been really doing this well. He has been to just about every pizza ranch across the state. So he will be there at an all-you-can-eat pizza buffet. And there are so many different types of pizzas. There's a taco pizza. There's a buffalo ranch pizza. And he'll sit down with voters, whether that's 10 people that show up to an event or 50 people. And he'll start to have a really intimate dialogue with Iowa voters as he's eating a slice of pizza. And so voters tell me that when they get to see candidates in an intimate setting, a one-on-one setting where they can share their personal stories, candidates can share their personal stories, they really feel a connection to different types of candidates.
Before I let you go, you said pizza ranch. Is a pizza ranch something in Iowa?
Oh, it is definitely something in Iowa. If you talk to any Iowa voter, they will tell you that Pizza Ranch is really the symbol of the Iowa caucuses. It is a place where people can eat and also listen to a potential president. So they really like that. And candidates definitely utilize that to their advantage.
Excellent. Layli Ipsa at the Pizza Ranches in Iowa. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
The Iowa caucuses officially kickstart the presidential election, and that means more campaign ads and videos circulating online. But a warning about some of those ads: what you see and hear may not be real at all. Misinformation and generative AI taking center stage in 2024. Here to talk more about that is ABC senior reporter Emmanuel Saliba. Emmanuel, you work with an ABC team that specializes in spotting misinformation. What do voters need to look out for?
Generative AI has been top of mind for not only voters, Well, I'm not sure if it's top of mind for voters, but they should be aware of it, that the technology has gotten to a point that it is so good that you are able to create a hyper-realistic photo or a video depicting a politician saying something they didn't. And while we've always had the ability to manipulate video, photos, or audio, now it's just getting to a degree that it's almost impossible to tell without the use of technology. And as voters are consuming so much content on social media, I mean, not only voters, we all are, we have to be hyper-vigilant of what we see and what's being fed to us, not only from non-official channels, but from official channels.
And it's also the labeling. I want to play you this ad that was put out by the Republican National Committee. And it's not actually AI-generated politicians, but it's AI-generated photos of what could happen if Biden wins again. So let's play a little bit of that.
This morning, an emboldened China invades Taiwan. Financial markets are in free fall as 500 regional banks have shuttered their doors.
Border agents were overrun by a surge of 80,000.
And what you just heard, again, as a reminder, that was not real. That was generated by AI. It was fake. In that particular ad, very, very tiny in the corner, it says these photographs were generated using AI. And it gets further along in the ad when you see that. These were not pictures of politicians or politicians speaking. It's AI-generated fake photos of migrants at the border, of banks closing, of people waiting in line, all AI-generated. You could have done that before AI, but just the idea that so much of that is out there. You mentioned labeling. Is there any rules that are in place that say this is fake?
There is a push towards legislation ahead of the 2024 elections. It is not federal at the moment, but it is state by state. They're moving to pass laws that would require politicians to label ads with a disclaimer, but also actually stop people from creating ads that could be misleading. So having a politician say something they did not would be deemed inappropriate and wouldn't be allowed in certain states. And so we're seeing, as we're heading towards the 2024 elections, states make that decision.
So there's another one. I want to play that Hillary Clinton one mm-hmm. for you. I mean, there's other ones out there. But what I'm going to play right now is not Hillary Clinton. It is an AI-generated voice pretending to be Hillary Clinton endorsing Ron DeSantis. This is fake, and it was something that was circulating widely on social media.
You know, people might be surprised to hear me say this, but I actually like Ron DeSantis a lot. Yeah, I know. I'd say he's just the kind of guy this country needs.
And Hillary Clinton has not endorsed Ron DeSantis. And again, that was completely fake video that has been circulating online.
I'm not sure that everyone knows that the technology has reached this point. And so first, we need to make sure that people understand what the technology is capable of and how it can be used by bad actors. And that's our job, to explain it to people. Then I think people naturally will be skeptical. And that you pointed something really important, which was the lips didn't match the audio. But think about 1 second if there was no video, if it was just a piece of audio.
And that's what was so important. That's why I listened to it with my eyes closed, because the average person isn't, not only in this country, but this is something that's happening worldwide, that a lot of elections are happening in 2024. There's a lot on the line going forward this year. And this stuff is happening everywhere.
And, you know, it's going to be a combination of things. Making sure everyone knows that the technology exists and that we're there, we can create and replicate people's voices. The legislation needs to be in place, which it is in certain states, where that would not be allowed within an election cycle. Social media platforms need to come up with a solution. Are they going to allow this type of content to exist on their platforms or not? And if this is considered misinformation, you know, a lot of the platforms have reduced the number of trust and safety teams, meaning the teams that take care and that prevent misinformation from existing on their platforms. Those teams have been reduced. So what happens when you reduce those teams, and what kinds of policies are in place at those places to prevent that type? And it still exists. I mean, you're playing it and it's live on that platform. So, you know, there are a lot of things that have to come together for us to have a shot at not being impacted by a flood of falsehoods.
And preserving democracy.
And preserving
democracy. We can go that far.
Yeah, of course.
Emmanuel Saliba, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, the harrowing moments on board that Alaska Airlines jet where a door panel flew off in midair. Plus the tragic toll the war in Gaza has taken on those assigned to cover it. On Perspective after this.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
From ABC News, this is Perspective. This week's stories and why they matter. I'm Sherry Preston. Coming up, all the gizmos unveiled at this year's CES. But first, in the last week, the FAA has grounded 171 Boeing 737 MAX 9 jets. The question being, how did what's called a door plug, essentially a filler for an unused emergency exit door, come off of that Alaska Airlines MAX 9 while in flight? There was an explosive decompression inside the plane when it happened, the harrowing scene documented by those who lived through it, Boeing now admitting a mistake. With more, here's ABC's Alex Stone.
It was a cold evening on Friday, January 5th. A routine flight, Alaska Airlines Flight 1282, rolled down the runway at Portland International Airport. 171 passengers and six crew on board the Boeing 737 MAX 9. Three babies and four unaccompanied minors were on board the flight heading to Ontario, California, a new plane that went into service in October.
15,000,
as the sun was setting, the flight lifted off. Just minutes after takeoff at around 5:11 p.m. and at 16,000 feet, there was what sounded like an explosion on board. Explosive decompression. Cold air rapidly filled the cabin. The cockpit door flew open. The pressure so great the pilots had their headsets ripped off and checklists flew out. Pilots quickly donned their oxygen masks and radioed in that they had an emergency. The audio from liveatc.net.
We'll
have
to go down.
That ominous first radio call. Air traffic control didn't know who said that or what they were talking about. The controller asked the pilot to identify themselves and say it again. You can hear her heavy breathing in the cockpit oxygen mask. There was chaos on board. A big hole had just opened up in the wall of the plane. The wall disappeared. The intense pressure difference sucked out cell phones, papers, even the shirt off a boy. It ripped right off of him. In the back of the plane, passengers thought they were about to die.
I was really praying. I was asking God to put angels under the wings to hold us up.
When the oxygen mask came down, my mind was like, oh my God, something is seriously wrong.
What they didn't know on board right then was behind what looked like a regular part of the wall, there had been an unused emergency exit door. Boeing had sealed it up because it wasn't needed. It didn't look like an emergency exit door because it was hidden behind wall panels, but that door had just given way and blown out. Just by chance, on almost a full flight, nobody was sitting in seats 26A and B next to that open hole in the plane. The plane had just taken off, so everybody was seatbelted in. Nobody was sucked out. And at only 16,000 feet, the pressure difference was not immediately fatal. The pilots made a quick return to Portland, landing safely, but it would launch new questions about the beleaguered Boeing 737 MAX, which was grounded for many months after two deadly crashes in 2018 and 2019. ABC News aviation analyst Steve Ganyard.
What it most likely was something that happened on the shop floor when the airplane was being built. Either somebody wasn't following procedures or they weren't properly checked. There was no quality assurance.
Immediately, all 737 MAX 9 aircraft worldwide were grounded. In the U.S. had Impacts, United, and Alaska Airlines. Initially, they were hoping to inspect their planes and to get them back in the air, but then both airlines reported finding loose bolts and hardware on other MAX 9 aircraft as they inspected them, causing worry it was a problem beyond the one plane. The FAA saying safety, not speed, will decide when the planes can fly again. Former 737 captain and ABC News analyst John Nance.
The fact that loose bolts have been found in other similar aircraft indicates that possibly this is an endemic problem that was created in manufacturing, but we got a long way to go before we know that for sure.
On the ground, two iPhones sucked out of the plane were found, one still working and in great shape with a screen that had baggage claim information on it for Flight 1282. Portland teacher Bob Sauer found the door in his backyard.
When I encountered it, it was really much disbelief. It was very hard to understand that what everybody was looking for in Portland was actually in my backyard, and I was the first one to actually see it.
The NTSB has sent that door to a lab to be analyzed to find out, did the four bolts holding it onto the plane break, or were the bolts even there that night? Lead NTSB investigator Jennifer Homendy.
The fittings at the top of the door plug fractured. We don't know if the bolts were loose. We don't know if bolts were in there fractured, or possibly the bolts weren't there at all.
In recent days, the FAA notified Boeing it will investigate the company to determine if Boeing failed to ensure its products conformed to approved design and if they were in a condition for safe operation and compliance with FAA regulations. The FAA is telling Boeing it must comply with high safety standards that they're legally accountable to meet. In a strongly worded statement, the FAA saying, quote, "This incident should have never happened and cannot happen again," end quote. Boeing CEO Dave Calhoun addressed 737 factory workers in Renton, Washington, saying the company will be transparent, and he used the word mistake.
We're going to approach this, number one, acknowledging our mistake.
It's unclear how long Boeing 737 MAX 9s will be grounded. The investigation to understand why the door came off is underway. Already, passengers on board Flight 1282 are preparing lawsuits. Reporting for Perspective, I'm Alex Stone, ABC News.
Tens of thousands dead, a humanitarian catastrophe, and an uncertain future in the Middle East. The war in Gaza between Israel and Hamas has had widespread repercussions in the region. But those who have made it a mission to document what's going on, reporters on the ground, have also fallen victim to the fighting. ABC's Patrick Reville has more from Tel Aviv on the number of journalists who have died since the attacks on October 7th.
Israel's war in Gaza has been extraordinarily deadly for journalists. At least 79 have been killed in just over 3 months, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists. The highest toll for any conflict since the CPJ started collecting records 3 decades ago. The first deaths were of Israeli journalists, killed as Hamas rampaged through southern Israel during the October 7th attacks. Then Israel began its military operation in response. Reuters photojournalist Issam Abdallah among the first killed. He was filming with a group of journalists at the Lebanon-Israeli border. Then an Israeli tank fired into them, video capturing the moment. The tank hitting them a second time. 6 other journalists injured. Reuters and AFP, as well as Human Rights Watch and Reporters Without Borders, say their investigations show the group were deliberately fired on, demanding answers from Israel.
We call on Israel to explain how this could have happened and to hold to account those responsible for his death.
The IDF saying it was responding to anti-tank fire in the area and is investigating. But the deadliest toll by far for journalists is in Gaza. 72 killed. Wael Dadu, Al Jazeera's bureau chief, has lost several members of his family in Israeli strikes since October, including his wife, son, daughter, and grandson. Last week, his son Hamza, also a journalist, was killed in an Israeli strike on his car. The IDF saying he and 2 other reporters had looked like terrorists with a drone. Hamza was my soul, Dadu says, but this pain won't deter us from continuing. In December, Dadu himself was injured by an Israeli strike. The day after, he was back on air again.
ABC's Patrick Reville, one of the many reporters covering the conflict in the Middle East. Coming up, get ready to be inspired. A young actress with multiple disabilities goes from working in a warehouse to becoming a Hollywood star. Her message? You can do anything. On Perspective, after this.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Welcome back to Perspective from ABC News. I'm Sherry Preston. It's the tech event that attracts more than 100,000 people every year, gives manufacturers the chance to showcase their new ideas. This year, artificial intelligence is playing a big role, and the plain old TV is getting a big facelift. ABC's Rob Hawley and Mike Dubusky have some of the highlights from CES.
Sherry, CES, the huge tech show, back in a big way in Las Vegas. 130,000 people attending, around 4,000 exhibitors. But to be honest, CES is a TV show. And when I say it's a TV show, it is literally a TV show. Mike Dubusky, take us into the screen.
Yeah, so LG has been making a lot of headlines at CES this year with their new TV that they're calling the OLED Signature T, Rob. And the T in this TV stands for transparent. This is a 77-inch glass panel that you can watch your movies and TV shows on, but you can also look through and see whatever's behind your TV. LG does have a special film that will rise up behind this glass panel that is designed to add contrast, Rob, and that's for when you want to use your TV like a TV. But with that film down, LG sees this being more like a piece of furniture.
OLED T creates a sense of openness. The TV no longer has to dominate the room.
It's a really interesting TV. Rob, you've been taking a look at some other TVs that are not transparent, but still kind of interesting.
And Mike, to your point about TVs that don't necessarily look like TVs, another one that's been shown off at CES is from a company called CSeed. This is a 137-inch TV. So this is going to take up a ton of real estate in whatever room you put it in, except for the fact when you don't want to watch it, it folds up into something smaller. You're not going to probably want to put it completely away because you're paying around $200,000.
That's
for
enough.
A television that you can fold up and then shift out of the way. But it is certainly something that 137 inches is not going to dominate your room anymore. Now they're just supersizing it, isn't even the word. They're mega sizing it.
Right. I want to talk about a much smaller screen, a 2.8-inch screen.
Sounds ridiculously small.
Very small. It's not a TV. This is a new device from a new company. It's called the Rabbit
R1. I have heard
R1.
About this.
Yes. Oh, you've been hopping with excitement, I'm sure, to hear about the Rabbit R1, Rob. Well, this new company bills this device as a companion that essentially will use AI to use your phone for you. So here's their pitch. You pick up your phone and you're confronted with a grid of apps, and it's very easy to get lost in those apps. You open your phone to order takeout through Grubhub, but you end up scrolling TikTok for 2 hours and you forgot why you opened your phone in the first place. It's the digital equivalent of walking into a room and forgetting why you walked in there.
The smartphone was supposed to be intuitive, but with hundreds of apps on your phone today that don't work together, it no longer is.
Rabbit says that their solution to this is voice-controlled artificial intelligence. They have built what they call a LAM, a large action model, which is similar to the ChatGPTs of the world that we've seen, a large language model that can talk to you and give you information and answers to your questions and that sort of thing. But the difference with this large action model is that it can actually go execute tasks. So you kind of use it like a voice assistant, and it can access your Spotify account and play you the latest Dua Lipa single, or you can even ask it to like book you a flight, and it will go into your browser, log into your United account, and do that.
For your trip,
I found various flight options, a range of hotels to choose from, and car rentals available.
The big question, of course, is will this actually work in practice? This is a new company. They say they're going to put this thing on sale for $200 starting on Easter, because it is, of course, a rabbit.
And AI, Mr. Dubusky. In cars.
It's time to talk about the cars.
It is absolutely time to talk about
this whole conversation.
Because this was really kind of a car show. There was lots of AI in cars.
Yeah, that's right. So Volkswagen has an assistant similar to a Siri or a Google Assistant, and same problem as those other systems. You have to use these very canned phrases, canned words. It's not very natural. VW says that you can now integrate this system with ChatGPT starting this year in its cars, and it will give you a much better, more natural sort of conversational experience with your car's virtual assistant.
Do you think a kilt is formal enough for a red carpet event?
According to ChatGPT, people regard kilts as elevated dress suitable for formal affairs.
Fantastic. Find me the nearest kilt shop. Okay.
Something that, you know, has been a common problem and a common trouble spot for a lot of these systems is that they hallucinate. They get things wrong. They will make up information confidently, and that's a problem, especially as we now see this technology making its way into hardware products. If I'm going to ask my car to take me to my home, I want it to take me to my home, not somebody else's home. But again, that's just something we're going to have to keep our eye on as time progresses. But we've only scratched the surface of CES announcements, Rob. But for now, reporting for Perspective, I'm Mike Dubusky.
And I'm Rob Hawley, ABC News.
Before we go, a story that proves nothing is impossible. The star of the highly anticipated Marvel series Echo on Disney Plus, in her real life, is a deaf, indigenous amputee turned superhero, appearing in her first ever acting role, speaking through an ASL interpreter. ABC's Alicia Vitarelli has more.
It's been a great journey so far, a wild ride, you know, because I didn't have any acting experience before this.
26-year-old Alakwa Cox was working in an Amazon warehouse when a friend told her about the casting call for Marvel's new superhero, a deaf, indigenous woman from the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. Alakwa had only ever acted in a high school play.
So grateful for this huge opportunity that I've been given. It's surreal.
It seems this role was made for her. Alakwa is from the Menominee Indian Reservation in Wisconsin. She was born deaf and is also an amputee with a prosthetic leg.
I have a lot of communities that I can advocate for, and most of them are underrepresented. I'm excited for them to be able to see themselves through me on the screen. That maybe they'll think they can do anything that they put their minds to and they can achieve anything.
To accurately capture all of those communities on screen, director and Navajo filmmaker Sydney Freeland was very specific about her team.
First thing that we did is that we made sure that we had deaf writers in the writer's room. We made sure we had deaf consultants behind the scenes. We had an ASL master. We had Choctaw cultural consultants. We had Choctaw writers in the writer's room. We had Choctaw actors in front of the camera.
Oh, yeah. I did a lot of training. Absolutely. We were training 5 days a week, probably 3 hours, 4 hours at a time, including a personal training session. So on top of stunt training. So it was very, very fun. We had fabulous people on the stunt team, and it was great.
Alakwa's character, Maya Lopez, or Echo, is a crime fighter who turns disabilities into abilities.
She's a kind of a cross between a villain and a superhero.
And she's Marvel's second deaf frontwoman, alongside the Eternals, Lauren Ridloff.
What does young Alakwa think of this moment right now?
I am so excited for the fans to learn that Maya is a badass character, even though, you know, she has two disabilities. She is deaf and an amputee, but she can still be a badass. That means if I'm a badass, then anybody can be a badass. Is that right?
I'm like, what? It's me? I'm actually in the MCU? This is crazy.
Marvel's Echo is a 5-part series on Disney Plus and Hulu, Disney the parent company of ABC News, and it's safe to say the 26-year-old star is an inspiration on and off the screen. From ABC News, this has been Perspective. Thanks for listening. The show is produced by Aaron Ferrer and Marwa Mwaki. If you want to listen to any of our past shows, subscribe to the Perspective podcast. Give us a review if you've got the time. Tell us what you'd like to hear in the future and what you think. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find Perspective and other ABC News shows at abcaudio.com/podcasts. For ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.